Okay, so maybe I can go fast on the introduction then, since everyone is mostly familiar with this. So I wanted to start with basic problem in quantum gravity, is to understand such objects, partition function on computation or computation of observables for a fixed, a priori a fixed manifold, and we need to give a meaning of the measure on the space of a metric, possibly with addition supplemented by a matter fields and weighted by a gravity action coupled to matter. And we need to give a meaning of a gravitational observable and to extract physics from such a quantity. All this without any background spacetime. And the key guide to do so is the encoding of the full diffeomorphism invariant. Now, spin foam models are at the convergence of various points of view, which made their richness, and that I'll try to, in what I will talk about, illustrate this once again. So the simplicial gravity point of view, a spin foam model can be defined as a discrete functional integral. Geometric quantization of simplicial structures. Loop quantum gravity, where spin foam models provide a way to define the projector onto physical states as a sum of the histories. And there is a point of view of matrix models, which attempts to sum over both geometries and topologies, in particular group field theories that generate spin foam amplitudes as Feynman amplitudes. So I will mainly talk about those guys, group field theories, and in particular I want to make explicit a new geometrical formulation of those group field theories, which in fact we'll tie together in a manifest way those various views on spin foam models. Now, as you know, most spin foam models for gravity are based on topological BF theory. The motivation for this is of course the Plevansky formulation of classical gravity, formulated as a topological BF theory plus constraints, the so-called simplicity constraints, treating the B field of BF theory into such functions of the metric, where here gamma is a parameter that has no effect on pure classical gravity. Now, the most direct route would be to include the constraint into the measure of the path integrals. But this is not that has been historically done. Rather, the standard spin foam strategy has been to quantize the BF theory and to implement the simplicity constraint at the quantum level by promoting the B field into quantum operators. It led to various proposals. The oldest one is the first one is the Baire-Crane model. Of course, the advantage of such approach is that the topological BF models are easy to handle. In fact, they are exactly solvable. Spin foam quantization provides an exact quantization of the BF theory. But there are difficulties, and maybe a major difficulty is due to what, to me, makes those theories very interesting, namely the non-commutativity of the geometry. So, okay. More precisely, it has been observed quite long ago, but by Barbieri, that the operators that needed to characterize simplicial geometry do not commute. So the fuzziness of the geometry makes the imposition of the constraints at the quantum level difficult and ambiguous. In fact, this is in order to circumvent this problem that coherent states have been introduced. and which led to a model following a slightly different logic, namely the Frédéric-Krasnov model, where the coherent states parameters are interpreted as, or the coherent states labels are interpreted as discrete B fields on which to impose the constraints. In fact, they define quasi-classical bivectors, which allows to localize the constraints and define constraints model by imposing constraints on the coherent state labels. These models have a path integral formulation, a path integral like formulation in terms of those quasi-classical bivectors. I say quasi-classical because they have classical directions with quantized norm. And in the action is in fact quite non-standard action, but of course it provides a powerful tool for the semi-classical approximation, and it opens the way to WKB approximations. So path integral is obviously a very powerful tool. Now the path integral formulation, the coherent state path integral formulation, is quite remote from the original path integral here. And in fact, one of the goals of this of the work I want to present is to dig deeper into the relation between spin foam models based on quantum BF and simply simplicial path integrals of that type, where the integral is over, in particular, the integral is over fully classical bivectors, and with the explicit constraint BF action. So this is symbolic, and in fact, I will want to show results or explicit models with a specific measure here and a specific action. So the delta C here are the simplicity constraints. I don't formally the simplicity constraints, and this is a measure on a discrete connection and a discrete B field. So this is a discretization of constrained BF theory, or the Plebansky theory, formally. So I will show you a duality between spin foam models expressed in terms of algebraic quantity, algebraic weights, and path integrals of that form. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Is it similar to how you gauge things and say Young-Mills theory? I mean, it's like introducing the ghosts. This kind of looks like.
This is not a gauge fixing. So we are dealing with a constraint system, and we want to implement the constraints either before quantizing or at the quantum level. But this those are constraints. Those appear as a Lagrangian multiplier in the classical action. So the way I will show you the duality is via a reformulation of the generative field theories for spin foam models. I will present a dual formulation of GFT in terms of fields on whose variables are naturally interpreted as discrete B fields, and they are obtained from the standard formulation of GFT in terms of fields and groups by a certain group Fourier transform. Now, the Fourier transform is the group Fourier transform which induces by duality a non-commutative star product on the space of dual fields. The non-commutative product is the product dual to group convolution. Now the result of this duality, which I represent here by this map, is that at the level of the spin foam amplitudes, if you have two different Fourier transforms, the usual one that is a Plancherel decomposition, giving you Feynman amplitudes in terms of spin foam models, and a perfectly equivalent formulation in terms of those dual fields In fact, this is expressed as a non-commutative quantum field theory, whose Feynman amplitudes spits simpler short path integrals. And my goal will be to show you to show this formulation for the Augury model for BF theory, and show you that it suggests ways, because the B variables being explicit in this formulation, to implement the simplicity constraints directly at the level of the GFT action. The result will be that this theory will describe a dynamical series of interacting tetrahedra with sort of transparent simplicial geometry interpretation. The result is the spin foams are will take the form of path integrals with a non-commutative product on the space of on the functionals of the B variables, and this non-commutativity, this star product, encodes the non-commutativity, which is already present at the classical level, in fact, either in loop quantum gravity or if you analyze the phase space of BF theory. So this is important to emphasize that it's not an anomaly of quantization. In fact, this is just a representation of the non-commutativity of the B operator in terms of product of functions on a proper space. This is what you would want to do to realize, to build up a path integral for quantum BF. Now we will obtain an explicit measure depending on classical B variables, an explicit action, and a star product which leads to an effective measure, which it will induce corrections to the equation of motions, classical equation of motions of the action due to quantum geometry. Yes.
What you call the classical is the commutator.
So I will write the path integral will involve a measure on the space of classical bivectors, right? The space of integration the constraint measure will be defined on space of functionals of those classical bivectors endowed with a non-commutative star product. So in this sense, we're describing non-commutative space of B variables. In three dimensions, you'll have, in fact, the SU2 non-commutative space. So the second thing I want to discuss in light of this result is to discuss the encoding of simplicial diffeomorphism symmetry in GFT. Okay, so let me start. I will start in three dimensions with the group field theory for 3D Riemannian gravity based on SO3, which is the Bulatov model, usually formulated in terms of fields on three copies of the group, satisfying a certain shift invariance, and whose dynamics is governed by such actions, whose combinatorics mimic combinatorics of tetrahedron. So a field here, the three edges represent, the three variables represent the C edge of a triangle, and my interaction combines four triangles to form a tetrahedron. And my kinetic term encodes the gluing of tetrahedron along common triangle to build up, at the level of Feynman diagrams, simplicial complexes weighted by certain amplitudes, namely a spin foam amplitude. Now, as I said, you have two Fourier dual representations mapping group functions into tensors in irreducible representations of SU2. Or fields on bivectors. The first representation leads to such expansion of the group field in terms of the Wigner matrices. And here the Clebsch-Gordan coefficient, so it's an invariant tensor in representations SU2 representations, and that show up because of gauge invariance. And in fact, the field in this representation pictures a three-valence spin network vertex, namely a quantum triangle in the sense of geometric quantization. And the vertex term in this representation is written in terms of 6J symbol. And the amplitudes give the spin foam amplitude, the Ponzan-Roger spin foam amplitudes. Now, I will. Now I'm interested in an alternative Fourier transform, which is of such a type. I define plane waves like this. I take a trace of xg, where x is SU2-Lie algebra, or R3 or SU2 coordinates, so that I can write my SU2 in terms. I fix the basis of my Lie algebra, so I can identify Lie algebra and vectors, and have those my basic plane waves, where P is a coordinate on the group manifold. And so the space of dual fields inherit a non-commutative star product that I define on plane waves like this from the group convolution. And in fact, this tool is originated from the work by Majid and has been reinvented or by Laurent and Etera in the context of 3D gravity coupled to matter. So this star product here, defined on plane waves and extended on the space of dual fields in a straightforward way, defines a star product for a non-commutative space with such Lie algebra commutation relation. Now in this representation, gauge invariance is dual to a closure constraints for the variables of the field. A closure constraint, so that I write like this. So gauge invariant ensures that phi is equal to C star phi, where C is a delta non-commutative delta function, which imposes the closure of closure relation for the three vectors. So R3 vectors, argument of my fields. This is a non-commutative delta function. So as a function of R3, it has a non-trivial width. It's not a sharp delta function, but it acts as a Dirac distribution for the star product. And the point is that here, gauge invariant fields now are viewed as a non-commutative triangle. The three arguments are the three edge vectors of a non-commutative, closed edge vectors of a triangle. That is non-commutative because of the star product, and so the field variables are as metric variables associated to the edges, and in fact this representation has been coined a metric representation of the Bulatov model. Now, by duality with convolution, you can write the action in terms of those dual fields. And you get, so here the star product relates repeated indices. So the point is that you get, you write the GFT as a non-commutative field series with flat, like flat variables, R3 variables, and whose geometry becomes manifest. So you have, so the interaction patterns three metric triangles that you glue together to form a tetrahedron by identification of the edge vector, strict identification of the edge vectors, thanks to the star product. Modulo a flip of orientation, expressing the fact that the orientation of subcomplex common to two simplices inherit opposite orientations for two simplices. Yes.
The star in the first in the quadratic term. Yes, because you consider the field which is gauge invariant. No?
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Because I can also write something which looks like the Bulatov model, which is not gauge invariant.
Right.
Then I put some.
Yes. So I would have to insert a projector onto gauge invariant field here.
Yes. So I would
here or in the or in the propagator.
In the interaction term, but in the quadratic term, I don't necessarily need to put a star.
You don't necessarily to need to put what, a star?
So if I use a field which is not gauge invariant.
Yeah.
In the group formulation, I write just the quadratic part, which is just the identity.
Right.
And then the interaction
yes.
is more complicated
yes.
because it's a.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now I include this Fourier transform.
Mm-hmm.
The interaction gives me star products all over the place, but the quadratic part Does that mean star product?
Yeah, the star product is there because it's just dual to convolution in the group. So you, whether you work with gauge invariant fields or not, right? You write your action in terms of group fields with using convolution product in the group, right? So the operation that is dual to convolution product is the star product. So in fact, you have whether you work with gauge invariant field or not, you have exactly the same combinatorics. That you can represent here by those diagrams than the usual group field theories, but you replace.
I'm wondering, can I eliminate the star in the quadratic part and still get the same amplitude?
No. No. So this is those are the Feynman rules, which in fact associate to each algebraic quantities a very transparent geometric interpretation. Let's take, for example, the vertex term. And so here by L, I label my triangles. So each triangles have three edges. And so in each triangle, I have three edge vectors labeled by 1, 2, 3. Now along the strain here, have a function that identifies the metric of an edge common to two triangles, L1 and L2, sharing the edge, sharing an edge here. And my vertex function will identify, thanks to a delta function, my edge vector up to here a plane wave. This is my plane wave popping out of gauge invariant. And this has to be read as identification of the edge vector modulo holonomies between the frames attached to my two triangles. And this is because of the commutation rules of any function with the plane waves. Any function of x that the plane waves, if I commute with a plane wave, have such a commutation rules. So EH star F is the transform F star EH, where F H is of X, is the evaluation of F in the rotated X. So for each of my strands are dressed with such factors. Which can be interpreted, which are naturally interpreted geometrically, so in this way. Yes. Yes. So. Yes. So gauge invariants read like this. If you want, you have for all h, phi, I can multiply freely by a plane wave. Or if you want eh star, it's a rotation invariance, where this is a eh of x1, eh of x2, eh of x3. Those are my plane waves. Right, so this is gauge invariance. So in order to write my Feynman rules, I write the identification function, and I act by group averaging, if you want. And this is where the plane wave come from. So I have a series. I have a series of metric triangles. I glued together to build a metric tetrahedron that I glued together to build a simplicial complex endowed with a non-commutative metric. If I compute the Feynman graphs, I compute them by just sticking the strands together, the vertex functions, vectoric and propagators together along the strands using the star product. I get a product of phase amplitude. And so the faces of my graph are dual to an edge. and I have a quantity that again has a very transparent geometric interpretation. So I labeled by J the triangles surrounding my my edge, and my xj are as many as the metric of the same edge seen is in various frames in the frames of the various triangles surrounding the edge. And now the amplitude associated to a face of my graph or an edge of my triangulation is a function that will identify all those metrics up to parallel transport between those frames. Now, if I integrate in each of those, if I integrate over all metrics but one, the one of a reference frame, I get an amplitude that takes the form of a simplicial path integral, the simplicial path integral form of the Ponzano-Reggie model, with an explicit discrete metric and discrete connection that are the gauge variable.
So, little bit yes. About the quadratic part, but there is really something which I don't understand. So, when I write on the group the action, let's take gauge invariant. So, then the quadratic part is just the identity, it's inverse the identity, I'm very happy.
Yes.
So, now you wrote the quadratic part with a star.
Yes.
So, this, what you wrote in Feynman runs is the inverse of the star or what? The identity, you tell me that in this space is the identity is the star product and the inverse of the star product is the star product itself.
So a way to make sense of this is just to start from the Feynman rules in, if you want. Don't worry about invertibility of the kinetic term. You can start from the Feynman rules in group picture and Fourier transform. Right? If you write the propagator in the group picture and Fourier transform, you get exactly those delta functions.
Good. But then I'm not certain that the quadratic part you wrote with the star product there is exactly what I get in the action. So I can understand that I take the Feynman rules and I Fourier transform and I get star product, and that's okay. Then the quadratic part, will it be phi star phi in the star basis?
Yes. So those delta functions are projectors, right? So you have the kinetic term is a projector as a standard group field theory. So you worry about the invertibility of the kinetic term.
So
this is just as a projector as before.
It's either the projector if I work with non-gauge invariant fields,
yes,
or it is the identity for gauge invariant fields. And I'm a bit disturbed that the identity looks like a star.
Right. The NSD looks like a star. Right. So I illustrated here that I have two representations of the same theory. One giving me spin foam representation of the Ponzano-Reggie model, and the other one giving me the simplicial path integral formulation of the Ponzano-Reggie model. I can do the same in higher dimension. And using the group Fourier transform of spin 4, SU2 cross SU2, I have exactly the same picture, but now the variables of my fields are a quadruple of bivectors that close. So you represent a tetrahedron endowed with a bivector geometry. In fact, I can write the action in terms of that looks like expressed as a non-commutative field theory, compute the Feynman amplitudes, and I get the BF path integral, just as before. Now, the availability of the discrete B fields, explicit discrete B fields, suggests a straightforward idea to implement the simplicity constraint directly at the level of the field. So what I want to write is an operator acting on the field, implementing the simplicity constraint on each variable, so that the constraint field itself will have a natural interpretation as a metric tetrahedron, right? So I have in BF theory, I have a non-geometric tetrahedra endowed with a bivector geometry. I impose simplicity constraint on the bivectors to get a metric tetrahedra. You can do this using the linear simplicity constraint with or without the emergency parameter here. And you get, so the natural way to implement those constraints while taking into account the non-competitive of the field is to use a Dirac distribution implementing the the non-commutative delta functions implementing the linear simplicity constraints. And I will act with such function on the field. So here I have a should have written the product of the four J's of such functions that star multiply with the field. This object for when gamma goes infinity, so in absence of the emergency term in the simplicity constraint or in the action, what I write here. So if I consider, for example, k equals 1, I can rewrite this operator in group space and obtain exactly the projector onto the homogeneous space. So what I get for k equals 1 here and gamma and no gamma or gamma equals infinity, I just rewrote the projector, the Baryk-Train projector for k equals 1. Something that is that can be viewed as aesthetical, but there is a way to implement the Baryk-Train projector in a covariant way, in a way that it commutes with gauge invariance. And to do this, the trick is to extend the field to include an additional variable, an SU2 variable, and interpret it as the normal to the tetrahedron. Those variables, you can introduce them in BF theory. You define a different theory because it has a different boundary states, but the bulk amplitudes are the same because the integral over the k's drop. But the explicit presence of the normals in the field here allows you, in fact, in the case of Baryk-Train, for example, to promote this as an operator, provided you extend gauge invariance to a gauge covariance that not only rotate the bivectors, but the normal as well. So you have a formulation of the Baryk-Train model in terms of at the level of the group field theory in a fully gauge covariant way, or the simplicity constraints are imposed in gauge covariant way. So they are ambiguous for that. From that point of view, the definition of the model is unambiguous. And you, at the level of the amplitude, you define the same Baryk-Train amplitude, but with boundary observables extended to include normals that you can integrate out to recover the normal Baryk-Train boundary state. Let me point out that for any gamma, this object is not a projector. So this can be viewed as a problem for the definition of the theory or an advantage, considering that it leads to a non-trivial propagator, hence dynamical from the point of view of the renormalization group. I define my constraint theory by constraining the fields in the vertex action, the vertex interaction term, so that I don't have any trouble with inverting the kinetic term. What I obtain is a theory of dynamical, non-commutative geometric tetrahedra, whose Feynman amplitudes by construction gives a path integral for BF theory, with Holst Plemansky constraints and non-commutative B variables. This strategy leads to a natural candidate for a model with gamma, as I mentioned, that you can see directly at the level of the action. It reproduces Baryk-Train model in the limit gamma equals infinity, but differs from the existing model otherwise. And in particular, no rationality condition is imposed on gamma. And you obtain models which, by construction, have two dual formulations: one in terms of algebraic weights or 15J symbols, and a particular fusion coefficient that encode the simplicity constraints, and non-simplicial path integral with the BF action and a constraint term here, which you see, so for each triangle, so you have a bunch of factors whose role is to impose the simplicity of the bivectors in each frame, in the frame of each tetrahedra surrounding the triangle. So each triangle carries a bivector, and I impose simplicity constraints in each tetrahedra, in the frame of each tetrahedra surrounding this sharing this space. An interesting point is that the first term, so if I extract the term corresponding to the reference tetrahedron, h bar is a function of the holonomy, which is just so H0j is the holonomy from the reference tetrahedron that I call g equals 0 to the tetrahedron tj equals 0 to the tetrahedron j in the list of in the list of tetrahedra surrounding my my face. So the first term is the first term for j equals 0 does not depend on the connection, and so you have a part of the constraint that is independent on the connection that implements the linear simplicity constraints, and the remaining parts that constrains the measure on the space of connection that could be viewed in canonical language as secondary constraints, in the sense that they arise from imposing those primary constraints at all time in all tetrahedra. So this model is so this formulation is gives a new model for a generic beta, and when beta equals one, this gives an interesting new path integral formulation of the Baric train model. Now, it raises the question of the semi-classical limit, which should include a commutative limit. And a question one can ask is whether this measure is compatible with the canonical analysis of Holtz-Plebansky. Do you have questions? What time do I have left since I started? Okay. Okay. So now I want to jump into another set of questions. So, in light of this framework, which is to have those this expression of the spin foams as a simple Schull path integral with an explicit action, the question is whether one can trace back various notions of diffeomorphisms invariants on discrete gravity to properties of the GFT, or symmetry of the GFT, or constraints of the different interactions you can plug into your action, and the result is that in the colored Bulatov model, and I will illustrate, you can find a field transformation that ties together the vertex translation invariants of discrete gravity. So really, the vertex displacements of Ritchie gravity, for example, Ritchie calculus, the Flatnev constraints of canonical quantum gravity, and the topological coarse-grained identities for the 6J symbol. Moreover, there is a way to relate this field transformation to the gauge symmetries of the discrete gravity action that shows up in the Feynman amplitudes, and that are due to essentially Bianchi identities. Now, the main point or the main message is that in order to realize this, you need to embed the group field theory into the framework of graded quantum field theory. since because of non-commutativity, the translation symmetry is deformed. And so it suggests to add an ingredient to GFT, namely an exotic statistics that allows you to implement the symmetry at the quantum level. To implement this, the colored formalism is needed, which just consists of not having one field but four copies of the field, which represents labeled by a certain color, and writing the, for example, the interaction terms like this, they are linear in each colored field, and that represent a tetrahedron with a colored face. The advantage of this is that I will, of course, allow to transform differently the four copies of my field. And so I want to realize such a shift symmetry that really corresponds to the translation of. Each colored field represents a colored triangle and endowed with a metric. And my vertex, or my interaction term, specifies the gluing of triangles along common edges to build up a metric tetrahedron. And so I have two metrics per edge that are the metrics, the metric of the same edge seen in the frames of the two triangles sharing it. Now, what I want to realize as a field transformation is the geometrical displacement of one vertex of the tetrahedron, if I see it as embedded in R3. And formally, I would want for the variables of the field of the three colors, the colors of the three triangles sharing that vertex, such a shift of the variable of the metric, which preserves the closure of each triangle. I guess the figure speaks for itself. So this is what I would want to do. So this subgraph patterns a vertex of the tetrahedron dual to that to this picture. So I have my the vertex can be labeled either by a triple of colors that correspond to the three triangles sharing that vertex, or equivalently by the color of the triangle opposite to it. Now, this symmetry is realized by such a transformation. So what do I do here? Formally, I shift the variables and I take the star product with respect to epsilon. In terms of the good variables, it amounts to multiply my fields by plane waves, whose arguments are the gauge invariant composition of the group element. So you see here that had the field theory be on the Nabelian group, say R3. I wouldn't have, I can start with a Bulatov-like model on R3. The group Fourier transform becomes the usual Fourier transform on R3, and I would write such symmetries here without the star product. So I would simply have such shift of the variables, and here I would have the standard plane wave, with here the group. Product being replaced by the Abelian product. And well, you can see that the interaction term, which is essentially the product of the four fields here is left invariant under such transformations because of the alternated sign of the group elements. So in the abelian case, you have such transformation, and in fact you have four of those for the four vertices that define symmetry. The subtlety here is that the symmetry is deformed due to non-commutativity of the metric space. In fact, it has to be understood as the action of a Hopf algebra symmetry, characterized by a non-trivial action on the tensor product of fields due to a non-trivial coproduct. And the relevant quantum group here is the translation part, as far as translations are concerned, of the Drinfeld double, which is a quantum deformation of the Poincaré group. So the relevant object, so you see if you fix a G2, so a group functions can be viewed as element of the representation of the deform translation group here. So the translation part of the Drinfeld double are functions essentially functions of SO3, and the translation generated by a certain function acts on the group field by multiplication. So far, the non-triviality of the algebraic structure is in the non-trivial coproduct, which deforms the action on a tensor product of two fields, or fields of two variables, or a tensor product of two representations here. And that acts via a non-trivial coproduct in this object. Probably can see, which is simply given by a the group product induced by the group product. In terms of Fourier transform, a group Fourier transform, I can go from my group function to function on my function on R3 here. An infinitesimal transformation, so generated by a plane wave, so it's a specific function f that depends on the generator epsilon. You see that it acts on a tensor product of field in a way that can be written symbolically like this, with the star product. So I shift by epsilon and I take the star product with respect to epsilon, which makes more, which is written in less symbolic way in group space. Where the star product of plane waves is just given. So this is for F being a plane wave. So this is the action of a translation generated by epsilon. So here I define a certain representation. I can define its dual that acts by multiplication by f g minus 1 here. And in fact, my point here is that if you fix g2 here, for example, that is not acted upon by the translation, the right algebraic way to interpret this group field under this field under action of the symmetry is to see it as living in a tensor product of representation of the type V star tensor V or V dual tensor V in the representation of this of that Hopf algebra. So this is how we interpret this these transformations. And now, to make sense of this symmetry at the level of the GFT, you need to embed the GFT into the framework of graded quantum field theory and view the interaction as the evaluation of a tensor product of fields on which the symmetry will act, the transformation will act non-trivially thanks to the non-trivial coproduct. In other words, the action of my on my product tensor product of fields phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, phi 4 is the star product of those plane wave, which is trivial due to the alternate. So you'll have a big plane wave labeled by g1 minus 1 g3, z3 minus 1 g4, g4 minus 1 g1, and you automatically have a an invariance of this of this action. Now, the price to pay, at least to implement the symmetry at the quantum level, so to do things properly, is to have a non-trivial braiding to permute fields. So in the language of field theory, it amounts to have an exotic statistic on the fields with a non-trivial braiding that is encoded into the R matrix of the Hopf algebra, and that can be found found explicitly. And so this is a braiding map that tells me how to commute two fields, right? And this is my braiding rule that with this definition I have a well-defined action of my symmetry on the product of fields because the braided braiding map commutes with the action of my translation. So formally, in fact, you can define perturbatively the theory with any braiding you want. In fact, Uccle has done that. So formally and viewing the interaction terms as tensor products, you have a braided Wick theorem, and provided you use a braiding map to permute fields, you compute endpoint functions that live in certain tensor products. And in principle, you can compute Feynman diagrams, the Feynman amplitudes, adding braiding rule, the braiding rule, or the braiding for such variables for each crossing, non-trivial, for each crossing of the graph. Now, if the braiding does not commute with the action of the symmetry, of course, the symmetry is broken at the quantum level. Namely, you have certain graphs. And in particular, the graphs with non-trivial crossings that will contribute to breaking the symmetry. One of the possible messages here is that if you want to implement such symmetries, and I will show you. What the invariance of the vertex means in terms of the notions of the action of diffeomorphisms found in the literature. If you want to implement the symmetry at the quantum level and be able to compute Wyrian entities, you need to add the exotic statistic to the field, and you modify the theory. So the question is so an open question is what is the geometric interpretation of the and what are the amplitudes of this modified GFT with this non-trivial braiding. Now this now let me map talk about the correspondence between the invariance of the vertex function that I can write. This is a vertex function I can write in the metric representation in terms of the, of vectors, in the group representation or in terms of tensors, and in the three representations writing the action of the symmetry or the invariance of the vertex function in the three representations gives you a geometric interpretation related to the action of diffeomorphisms. So here, as we have seen, we have implemented the symmetry as translation of the vertex translation of the tetrahedron in an embedding of the tetrahedron in R3. And this is how the discrete residual of diffeomorphisms act, for example, in Rege calculus and discrete gravity. Now, in the group representation, the invariance under translation of the vertex of one of the vertex reads like this. So you have the vertex, which depends on 6 times 2, 12 variables, is invariant under multiplication by a plane wave, where G is a certain product of holonomies. Now, in this picture, GIL encodes the boundary holonomies, living in the boundary of the tetrahedron, patterned by the vertex here, and this you see this symmetry encodes closure relation, which is simply saying that the holonomy around a loop circling the vertex is a zero, and this encodes the flat. Well, this corresponds to the flatness condition of the boundary connection, which is the role of the Hamiltonian constraint for example in gravity. So symmetry implements the flatness of the boundary connection. Now in the spin representation, you can do the same gymnastic using the Planchel decomposition. And in fact, if I work with a rotation invariance plane wave, so I sum over the directions of epsilon, and I Planchel decompose this equality, I get such identity where, so this is a 1-4 Pachner move identity for the 6-J symbol, which is gauge fixed by the presence of a dual character, this Fourier transform of the character, that represents, in fact, this is a non-commutative analog of a delta function fixing the norm of epsilon. So you can understand this as a and so I wrote the Pachner move or coarse grain identity for the 6J symbol. So mapping, so the Pachner move identity map cuts one tetrahedron into four. And here, my gauge fixing, the gauge fixing term that pops out, just fix the length of one of those edge to epsilon. And so this. So in the spin representation, I related the symmetry to such identities, which are, on the other hand, related to recursion relations and interpreted as discrete Villard-De-Witt equations. Now, something I wanted to illustrate on the blackboard, but I won't do it. I won't have time. Is the relationship with the spin form symmetries. So as we showed, the GFT amplitudes, starting from the metric representation, have that path integral form where the discrete action, the argument of the exponential is the discrete form of 3D gravity that you can write here as just as the product of plane wave. when delta triangulates a manifold, it's possible you can identify discrete residual of the discrete versions of the local Poincaré symmetry of the continuous action, and in particular the translation symmetry that are due to discrete Bianchi identities that hold in the neighborhood of a vertex under the condition that the neighborhood of the vertex has the trivial topology for each vertex. Hence, you have a manifold condition. So those identities, Bianchi identities, allows you to write some a shift symmetry for the discrete metric here that will leave the action invariant in the non-commutative setting using Campbell-Hausdorff formula. That gives something, or in the non-commutative setting, and which is the new the new light shed on this thing, where the action of the translation is deformed, so has to be taken with the star product. So you see that. If I shift my metric by such parameters depending on my translation parameter, those are those depend on those those k elements that correspond to in Bianchi identities that are interpreted as the holonomy from a fixed vertex. In the link of the vertex, in the link of a vertex V, a fixed dual vertex, to the starting point of reference starting point of that I use to compute those loop holonomies. And so, if I writing a translation like this, this kind of quantities represent the same generator, but expressed in the different frames. So if you want translating XE by such rotated generators amounts to shift the rotated metrics, so all the metrics but seen in the same frame by the same parameter. And if I do this, taking into account, so viewing such product of plane waves as a tensor product of representations in the Hopf algebra, and I translate, I have an invariance thanks to Bianchi identities. So I relate Bianchi identities to a non-commutative invariance, and it's in fact possible to write algorithm. If you start from bubble graphs, spherical bubble graphs, and separate the loops to express it as the path integral, you can use the braiding to keep track of the invariance of the functions you compute that are all in tensor products like this, and in fact derive Bianchi identities out of derive Bianchi identities from just starting from the invariance, the symmetry, the translation invariance of the vertices. In this analysis, in fact, it naturally dissociates spherical bubble and non-spherical bubble, in the sense that the algorithm works for a planar bubble, and in fact. For the non-braided GFT, in fact, it has to be expected because no Bianchi identity holds in the case of non-spherical bubble. Now, extending the GFT to include the non-trivial braiding, and this is the conjecture, will restore Bianchi identities, so restore the identities, and so makes sort of, from that point of view, makes a spherical bubble and bubble more democratic from the point of view of their of how their contribution to the whole amplitude transforms and the translation. Okay, I would have liked making the, I can do maybe in another context the explicit calculations of the algorithm elsewhere. So let me just conclude the whole story very, very briefly. This formulation of spin four models as non-commutative path integrals gives new tool to study the semi-classical limit. At the level of the symmetries, little has been done on calculating, on actually studying the GFT with the non-trivial braiding, implementing the full symmetry at the quantum level. And as far as GFT is concerned, of course, the interest is not so much on the specific form of the amplitude, but rather on normalization aspect. In particular, divergences have to be tackled, and the GFT has to be, in fact, defined if you extract finite quantities. And effective continuum physics should be investigated in the sense that one should devise approximation tools to extract effective physics and define a continuum limit. So I'll stop here. So this, it has not much to do with what I told before, if not the fact that the presence of a symmetry can constrain the type of effort, counter terms that you can include or interactions that you can write in your action, right? So. Well, the fact that this is a deformed symmetry makes it challenging in the sense that it has been less studied. But in principle, once the theory is braided, still you have a selection principle on allowed interactions that you can write. If you want to write an action that is invariant, right? So. So if the symmetry was not deformed, you agree that presence of symmetries act constrain the type of terms you can write. And I agree that the fact that the symmetry is deformed has to be dwelled further. In particular, without braiding, it's possible, very well possible, with the trivial braiding that is used usually, that there is not much to say, and we have to extend the GFT to non-trivial grading to make.
One question.
Yes.
So this grading comes from the presence of the star product, which in turn comes from the fact that you look at the gauge invariant fields and so on. More.
Not really. So the grading comes from the action of a deformed symmetry. If you want to act with a deformed symmetry, you need a. This means you see your fields as living in representations of your Hopf algebra, and
because you have the star product. In the absence of the star product, you just have an unusual normal symmetry.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, that's what I. Yeah.
So have you checked what this symmetry does if I just take a trivial group? You know,
oh, three.
As you said, you want.
Yes. Yes.
No star product nowhere.
So, you can define. You have a translation symmetry. You have the same kind of interpretation. Of the invariance of the vertex, and you have invariance of the endpoint functions, and you can write world identities. You have it becomes a usual global symmetry.
So So then can I write this braided symmetry with the star product as some kind of, you know, commutative normal symmetry plus small corrections? Some
sure.
expression in some epsilon or something.
Well, more generally, the question is whether you want to develop this framework, like this non-quantity framework, or if you want to write this theory. If you want to develop the star product around the commutative limit.
Yeah, that's my question. So, can I develop around the commutative limit in some sense?
So if by can I. It means can I introduce a non-commutative parameter and formally write the product in terms of it and see it as a standard product plus corrections? The answer is yes. If the question is whether the theory makes sense, if you can handle divergences, or if then I don't quite know yet.
But you can still, so you can write your star product as the commutative product?
Yes,
plus
yes.
Explicit
yes, yes.
Kernels and so on and so forth?
Yes. Here I didn't, this is a star product that Laurent and Etera played with and extended to SO4 functions of several variables. So in principle, you can develop around the commutative limit.
So what becomes of your braiding, you know, because. Your braiding map. So if you are very close to a commutative product, what becomes? The braiding becomes just a simple commutation with no.
Yeah, plus. So you certainly have if you start from you'll have a bosonic statistic, deformed bosonic statistics, if you want, but you could. I'm not sure that we can make sense of the theory in the commutative limit, right? But this is definitely something to look at.
Yeah, because the examples of braiding, which I know, are not really, you know, you either have bosons or fermions, which are very far from bosons, or have anions, which are pretty far from bosons. So you don't really have, you know, bosonic statistics plus small corrections in no sense.
This is the case for a few theories with only Minkowski space. When we can have Poincaré invariants, so in those theories, it's not isn't not sure. There is no such constraints, or I'm not aware about any. Precisely, you can have exotic. In principle.
So let's think about it again.